The Pentagon just cranked Israel's counterintelligence threat level all the way up to critical, the highest designation, right there with our worst adversaries. U.S. officials are now using burner phones and staying tight-lipped in hotel rooms when they visit Israel because the Israelis are aggressively spying on top Trump administration people, digging for inside dope on decisions about Iran and Lebanon. This isn't some rogue operation. It's all coordinated, hyper-aggressive espionage from our so-called closest ally. Jonathan Pollard-style damage from the past should have been a warning, but here we are again. Americans are rightly asking how an ally that spies on us at this level gets treated like family.
With me, I don't care if you start throwing nukes immediately, responsibly, but immediately. And a case that I've been pushing is the use of an electromagnetic pulse weapon or weapons against Iran. Why are we waiting to get hit?
That's Jonathan Pollard, the most famous Israeli spy in modern history, who sold out our secrets, got our agents killed, you name it. He sold to the Russians, the Chinese, the Israelis, everybody. And remember, Trump pardoned him back at the end of his first administration. So now Israel's funding will be within the Pentagon in joint weapons development, but they're going to be allowed into everything and be able to claim co-ownership of the U.S. military-industrial complex that Eisenhower told us to beware, the technological elite that control the military-industrial complex. So think about that. Then you've got 38 states that have passed laws or executive orders that if you criticize Israel anyway, or ever boycott Israel, or criticize Zionism, or what happened in Gaza, these are laws that you cannot have any government contracts or government jobs. Totally illegal, unconstitutional tyranny. And that's because Israel admits they're moving their weapons industries here to the United States. And so now if you criticize anything Israel's doing, you're shut down by the state governments, violating our First Amendment. You add that with the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, you got to read that for yourself. Total lifetime fusion integration of everything, from academia to DARPA to MIT to secret weapons development to live intelligence, telemetry, weapons guidance, weapons systems, everything. Remember, the other agencies don't even let each other know what they're doing. The other armed services branches are in competition and let them have their secrets. And that's good to keep things compartmentalized. This is, Congress doesn't even know 10% of what the Pentagon's up to. This is Israel's coup against America.
The real gut punch is what's happening in Congress at the exact same time. On the heels of the revelation of Section 224 slowly advancing, Senator Tom Cotton slipped Section 622 into the FY27 Intelligence Authorization Act. This thing locks America into permanent unbreakable intelligence entanglement with Israel. It mandates expanded sharing, ties it to Israel's qualitative military edge, restricts the president or future Congress from scaling it back without jumping through huge legal hoops and notifying bought and paid for committees, and even pushes sharing with Abraham Accords countries. There will be no unwinding this. We are looking at intel fusion as a pillar of policy, handing over leverage that could bite us hard if relations sour. We'll find ourselves either towing the line for Israel or facing serious consequences. Meanwhile, the Pentagon flags Israel as a top spy threat, and lawmakers are wiring them deeper into our system. This isn't partnership. It's a one-way street that smells like foreign influence money run amok. America first means putting our sovereignty and secrets ahead of any foreign lobby. It's not optional, and it's a major insult on this 250th anniversary of our nation. John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
Folks, this is the War Room. War Room Live. Find us at alexjoneslive.com, on Rumble as well, rumble.com/thewarroomlive. We'll be right back in about 90 seconds to hit the ground running with all of today's headlines. We've got updates in the Carmelo Anthony trial and Israel spying to talk about. Don't go anywhere, folks. Big show.
Now now in the 21st century, it's time to stand up and realize that we should not allow ourselves to be crammed into this rat maze. We should not submit to dehumanization. The 21st century is going to be a new century. Not the century of slavery. Not the century of lies and issues with no significance and classism and statism and all the rest of the modes of control. It's going to be the age of humankind standing up for something pure and something right.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
I want freedom! That's what I want! And that's what you should want!
You're listening to Alex Jones.
The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it!
AlexJonesLive.com. Tomorrow's news today.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Monday afternoon, the 8th of June, 2026. Thank you so much for being here with us. We got a lot of news to cover today. Of course, updates to the Carmelo Anthony trial. It's not looking good. It's actually looking extremely bad. You just got an update from Brianna Morello. But just the bird's eye view, overview of all of this is basically the defense called some witnesses. They completely backtracked and admitted that they didn't actually see what they claimed to have seen. Basically, the entire foundation of the defense in the first place collapsed. And now there's a lot of speculation that they're possibly looking for a plea deal, which I don't understand. I don't think that's possible. Is it? Is that possible? That you can get a plea deal after your defense rests? Because that seems like an oversight. That seems like a loophole that should be closed. You're telling me that you can refuse a plea deal, reject a plea deal, go through the entire process of a trial, lose, essentially, understand that you've lost, and then go, actually, now I think I want a plea deal. Actually, now that I've lost, I think I deserve a plea deal. Crazy. Crazy. The crew's looking it up right now. Yes, it is legally possible to get and accept a plea deal after the defense rests, but it's incredibly rare. A plea agreement can technically be negotiated at any point before the jury returns a verdict or the judge issues a ruling. I think that's cheating. I think that should be considered cheating. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, the whole reason why we have plea deals is to avoid the trial, right? I don't even like plea deals as a concept all that much, but I do understand that, like, if you've got somebody dead to rights and they know it and you know it and you're like, look, we don't have to spend the money. We don't have to spend the time. I mean, it takes a lot of time. They got 600 people together and sifted through them to come up with the 18 jurors, the 12 jurors, and the six alternates. That takes a lot. That's a lot of manpower. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of effort. So you avoid all of that by going, look, we've got you. You know, we've got you. We'll go easy on you if we just skip the whole hullabaloo of the trial. You admit it. We go our separate ways. To go through an entire trial and then accept a plea deal, I don't get how that is even possible. That seems like cheating to me. We'll bring any updates as they arrive. I believe the defense has rested, but they're still closing arguments to do tomorrow. So we won't be getting a verdict by any means. But the report is that police presence around the courthouse has increased since they're expecting anger when the appropriate and accurate verdict finally comes down. So again, we'll bring you the updates on that. I still think it's very, very funny that the entire claim of Carmelo Anthony, not even his like innocence, but like the only way he could possibly be declared anything other than a cold-blooded murderer was this claim by the defense that that he was surrounded and he was ganged up on and he was in fear for his life. And there was never any evidence for that. There was a lot of evidence to the contrary. Is this the actual exchange? Witness, he was getting defensive. We didn't, someone we didn't know was in the tent. Carmelo said, you'll have to move me. Austin put his hand on his back. I saw Carmelo's hand go in the backpack. We were at a track meet. I wouldn't have expected to be there. But essentially, witness, the defense witness, claimed at the time to police that he saw all these guys gang up on Carmelo Anthony and that he thought it was self-defense because they were surrounding him and he couldn't get away. Then they play the video that not only shows that that A, didn't happen, but the B, the defense witness had his back turned to the event the entire time, so he could not have seen what he claimed to have seen, which, as a lawyer, as a prosecutor, I mean, that's got to be beautiful. That's got to be a beautiful moment. The dopamine rush I'm sure they experienced when that was exposed. Because you can try to impeach a witness a lot of different ways. Very rarely do you get an absolute contradiction, video evidence blowing up not only the central claim that they're making, but by extension, everything else that they're claiming, because they've been proven to the jury and everybody else to be abject liars. So amazing, amazing stuff by the prosecutors, amazing failure by the defense. As Brandon Morello was speculating, and I think there's something to that, you know, maybe they think they'll do better if there wasn't so much media attention. Maybe they just let this case fail by making some obvious mistakes that they can't get in trouble for, but that would require a retrial. And then maybe a year or two from now, the heat's died down and you can go through it again. But again, what a ridiculous scam all of this is. What a ridiculous scam all of this. I mean, every day this trial goes on is really like another crime being committed by Carmelo Anthony and his supporters and his family. He did it. We know he did it. He did it, I've been saying since the beginning, likely because he wanted to do it. He went there with that intention in mind, wanted to provoke a fight, wanted to stab somebody. That's been my assumption since the day it happened. And he could have just said, I did it, you got me, taken a plea deal, and put all of this to rest. Instead, they are maximizing racial conflict in this country. They are causing yet another instance of division through all of this. They are just lying completely. They collected all this money for a lawyer, and then, as my understanding is, they didn't even hire a lawyer with the money, and now we're going with a public defender. Like, maybe that's why the defense has been such a pitiful failure. But, like, they know all of this. They know all of this. He knows that he stabbed the kid. He knows that he's guilty. But, like, on the off chance that they can weasel their way out of it, he'll put all of us through all of this, and all of his supporters will support it when you can just imagine a world with at least moderately decent people that even if something goes crazy, they don't then feel the need to put everybody else through all of this horror all over again. I mean, to have these kids that I guarantee to this day probably get nightmares about what they experienced. I mean, I know a girl. I mean, it's just, you know, just think about what happened. Think about what happened here. If you've ever known anybody that, like, was the person to discover a murder victim, it's like that doesn't go away. That screws your entire life up forever. Imagine being one of these kids getting ready to do a day of track when, like, your team leader is just disemboweled in front of you. I mean, these kids are not. But Carmelo Anthony is going to make him go sit in front of a crowd, go sit in front of the eyes of, you know, a very contentious public, and relive that day in detail, in specificity. Why? Not because he thinks he's going to get away from it. He knows he's guilty. Maybe it's just hatred. Maybe just has a perverse love of seeing people suffer. I don't know what it is. I also don't know why we put up with it. So anyway, we'll bring you any updates as we get them. But long story short, the defense utterly failed to provide a single exculpatory piece of evidence. Even the witnesses and the claims that that formed the foundational basis of the entire defense argument were shown to be complete liars whose testimony was worthless. So can we charge them for that? I don't know what we do, but, like, how do we let the next Carmelo Anthony know that we're not going to put up with this? I don't know. Maybe we do just have to put up with it. I think there are easier ways. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say them on the radio. Like I said, we'll bring any updates and clips we find on that. I don't necessarily want to spend a whole bunch of time on it because it's just so obvious, but it is worth exploring the deliberate way that racial relations are being destroyed in this country. But we've got an anniversary to celebrate, folks. Well, wait, not celebrate. Condemn and memorialize is actually the correct word, because it was on this day in 19, what year was the USS Liberty? So I'd say 56, but that's a different name, a different date I was thinking. 1967, the USS Liberty was targeted deliberately for eradication by Israel in either a false flag attack to try to get us into the war against Egypt, or to simply destroy our ability to monitor what the Israelis were doing, because they may have been, brace yourself, this is a shocking, they may have been committing war crimes. I know what you're thinking, is that Israeli history began on October 7th, 2023. You may be surprised to know that there is almost a century of war crimes leading up to that moment. So people don't know that. They think that Israel didn't exist before October 7th and that was its creation. But no, in fact, it had been around for a while, actually. And nothing has changed. And nothing has changed between October 7th and now, and all the way back in 1967. In other words, the behavior of the Israelis has been a consistent plague on American foreign policy, and our soldiers and our governance this entire time. I'm going to go to the speech by Thomas Massie. It's about 5 minutes long, his speech on the floor of the Congress, which I love that Thomas Massie got ousted by Israel and was like, all right, I still got a few months in office. I'm going to make the most out of it. And is like writing bills to ban the ADL and AIPAC, and is memorializing the USS Liberty, and has now put forward a bill to stop Section 224. So I want to see him, you know, burn as much as he can on his way out. In this case, this is not something born from dislike of Israel, really, even. It's born from, well, to memorialize it, to commemorate it. You don't need an excuse. Why wouldn't you, right? These are your soldiers that were attacked and killed by a foreign power. It's actually very normal to remember that on a regular basis, commemorate that, memorialize it. That's totally normal. It's not born from some hatred of Israel, but not necessarily. Maybe it can contribute to that. The thing is, nobody can argue against the USS Liberty claim. They used to try. They used to try to lie about it. And in fact, what I should have done is grab video of the first Groyper War. If you remember, the first question of the first Groyper War, which was Nick Fuentes sort of culture jamming the culture war tour that Charlie Kirk was doing. And the first question asked was about, I believe it was the first one, was about the USS Liberty. And how can we say that Israel is our greatest ally when they did this to us? And Charlie Kirk's response was the standard response at the time, which was to say that's a conspiracy theory, that's anti-Semitic, how dare you bring that up? Ben Shapiro has, you know, confronted this question by basically saying, man, it was a long time ago, it was a mistake, who cares? That doesn't work anymore. You can't run with that anymore. It shows you how much things have changed since, I think, 2019, if I'm not mistaken, was the first Groyper War. So 2019, people like Charlie Kirk, major figures in the, you know, conservative right-wing movement, still had this knee-jerk reaction to claim that the USS Liberty didn't exist and wasn't real, and it was a total conspiracy theory, and shut up, you anti-Semite. Now we have libertarian congressmen giving five-minute speeches about it on the floor of the Congress. Things have changed quite a bit. But it's not just about memorializing it, which is normal and everybody should do, and it's not just motivated by hatred of Israel. It is about understanding how long Israel has controlled America, how thoroughly they control America, what the American government is willing to allow them to get away with, or in the case of the USS Liberty, actually participate in. Right? This wasn't possible without, you know, direct involvement by Lyndon Baines Johnson and others in the U.S. military. And then the cover-up after that. I saw a lot of people asking, why would we care? Like, why do people talk about this? Is this really going to stop the war in Iran or whatever else? And it's just, I don't believe that you can make that statement if you're not motivated purely by sort of a Zionist impulse to silence the truth. It doesn't make any sense. Why would you talk about one victim of a serial killer? I don't know, because they were a victim of a serial killer. Because taken together, all of these examples paint the picture of who we're dealing with here. knowing that not only was this never punished, right? They paid no price for this. The men that died or were horribly injured by Israel never got the justice they deserve, but that it was covered up deliberately by the mainstream media and political actors for the last 50 years. The same people who will claim to be, you know, the patriotic Americans like Mark Levin, as he, you know, encourages us to go to war with Iran, hate the survivors of the USS Liberty. They hate them. They really despise them. You really have to ask yourself, is this not a regular occurrence? Do we not see this throughout history? Because I've seen it. I've seen it on Twitter. I've seen it all over the place. They call people like Phil Torney and other survivors, they call them anti-Semites. They call them Nazis. What did he do wrong? What was his crime? To be a victim of Israel. To be a victim of Israel. To be a target of theirs. If you don't submit, you're the bad one. You're a Nazi now. Because you won't quietly accept that they're allowed to kill you. It really is despicable, but it's interesting framing. It's kind of like how you'll see Jewish film directors making documentaries demonizing Tsar Nicholas. And it's like, what did he do wrong? Oh, he was killed by the Bolsheviks? That's his crime? You'll see this cropping up over and over again, where it's like some of the people that are claimed to be the biggest anti-Semites, you go and you look at why they're called that, and it's like, wait, they were literally just victims of Israeli aggression and didn't accept that and weren't okay with that, and therefore have been called anti-Semites and Nazis. And the USS Liberty survivors are maybe the best example. Directly targeted. They tried to kill them. The USS Liberty sailors survived and then were shunned and ignored by the wider American public basically for the rest of their lives until a couple years ago. And of course, except for people like Alex Jones making a documentary about this all the way back in the 90s. Let's go now to Thomas Massie on the floor of the USS Congress, or the USS Congress, the US Congress, making the speech about the attack of the USS Liberty. Let's watch.
On the next day, on June 8th, they started the day. The visibility was unlimited. The American flag was flying proudly on the USS Liberty. More planes came from Israel to surveil the boat, the ship. And they thought they were in good shape, but what happened next surprised them all. French Mirage jets showed up and for 25 minutes strafed and attacked the USS Liberty. They shot rockets. They shot 30 millimeter cannons into the hull and into the ship. They even dropped napalm on the bridge of the ship. This was an effort to kill everybody on board. There was no intention of taking prisoners. After the 25 grueling minutes of attack on this virtually unarmed ship, and they thought things were over and they could recover, the torpedo boats showed up, three torpedo boats. They launched four torpedoes. One of them hit the hull of the USS Liberty and killed 25 people instantly. It blew a 40-foot by 40-foot hole in the side of this ship. They were intent on sinking it. But they were also intent on not having a single survivor. According to eyewitness accounts, the Israelis machine gunned the lifeboats that they put down. They machine gunned the firefighters who were on the deck. They were bringing the wounded and the dead to the mess hall to triage them. They had one doctor who was trying to help them all, put a few stitches in. It was harrowing, and it's amazing. If not for that crew, that boat would have sunk that day. But it still wasn't over. Helicopters showed up, combat helicopters. And the USS Liberty, even though their signals were being jammed by the Israelis, got a signal out. And there were ships that tried to respond. The USS Saratoga, the USS America sent planes. Both of them sent planes to help the USS Liberty. And something happened that's never happened before. A ship under attack, the planes were recalled. This has never happened before. And they sat there for 17 hours. 34 dead, 174 wounded. out of 294 crew members. That's over 70% casualty rate, unheard of. The Israelis were intent on leaving no survivor. And what about our own military? Why did they not send anybody for 17 hours to help these men? So what really happened? You know, the official reports say that it was a case of mistaken identity. But if you listen to Dean Rusk, former Secretary of State, Richard Helms, CIA Director, Bobby Ray Inman, head of the NSA, Captain Ward Boston, who was the chief counsel of the Court of Inquiry. If you listen to Admiral Moore, who served in Pearl Harbor, Midway, commanded both the Atlantic and Pacific Fleet, and was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, none of these distinguished men think this was an accident. They think it was intentional murder by the country of Israel, either as a false flag operation or because they simply didn't want anybody observing what they were doing that day. Well, I've got a call to action for everybody here. Honor these individuals. Quit ignoring that they exist. Go to their website, usslibertyorg. Support them. And while they're still alive, they need closure. Let's give them closure. Let's have an investigation. Let's pass a resolution honoring them. It's long overdue. And then they can have their justice. With that, I yield back. And I ask unanimous consent to enter into the record a declaration of Ward Boston declaring that the only official court of inquiry was invalid.
59-year USS Liberty anniversary remembering Israel's deadly attack on the American Navy spy ship. And again, like Thomas Massey said, it could have been a false flag attack. It could have simply been that they didn't want the USS Liberty monitoring them, as it was the most sophisticated, you know, monitoring ship out there. The response to this from the Israeli firsters, and they're really getting exposed these days. And it's very interesting because obviously we were called panickins, we were called leftists and Hamas supporters for not approving 100% or not going along with Donald Trump's attack on Iran. And we were told basically you're not really MAGA. Donald Trump is MAGA and you follow him blindly like a sheep. Don't you understand? But now he's going against Netanyahu. And little rat-faced weasels like Mark Levin are very angry about this. That's kind of surprising. Don't you understand, Mark Levin? We're on Hezbollah's side now. Don't be a panickin. Don't be a leftist. What are you, AOC? Don't you understand? Trump is the leader. Trump is our Führer, and what he says goes. And he now says Israel, a friendship with Israel over. Hezbollah, now best friend. So now, Mark Levin, you need to honor and support Hezbollah or else you're not a real MAGA supporter. Don't you want to follow the rules you laid down, you absolute moron, hypocrite, liar? Because that's really what it's all about. These people don't actually believe anything and everything they say is changeable. But what it reveals, obviously, is loyalty to Israel over anything else and a willingness to take advantage of and manipulate your political beliefs, the MAGA agenda, Americans' patriotism, whatever it takes to support their actual homeland, their actual loyalty, the Jewish state of Israel. So we'll return to that on the other side. Big Israel spying story coming out from the Pentagon. Alex has talked a lot about it. We'll give you the history of Israeli spying on the U.S. It's innumerable. It's impossible to say all of it. There's so much.
Plug for about 90 seconds at the end of the first hour. Didn't plug any last hour. And I'd raise that point. I'd say, aren't I good? I didn't plug. It's bad I didn't plug. But I didn't want to interrupt that guest. That's how we fund this operation. If I just plugged twice an hour, we've done the math, we'd have plenty of funds around this place. And I can then hire more crew, more stuff. But I don't do it, so we're almost in the red again. So be conscious about this and realize when you fund this operation, you are funding your insurance in the fight against tyranny. And the products really work because we want to sell you something that is going to be great, that's good for you, that blows you away. So you go, man, that Alex Jones was right again. Not just about what he covers and says, but the products. Our T3 iodine is not instant gratification. It takes about 2 weeks on average for it to kick in. It is the missing link. Most people are iodine deficient. The iodine that's in the environment, most of it's bound, meaning it's not atomic. It's not pure on the periodic table. It is bound to a whole bunch of other stuff, and you don't absorb it properly. This is atomic iodine. It does everything. Now, again, you die without oxygen in 4 minutes. Everybody knows this. 4 minutes without oxygen, the average person's dead. Some people quicker. Without water, you die in about 4 days. Out in the desert today, most people die in about 45 days without food. Now, why is that? Well, because the food has the vitamins and minerals in it. And I know I'm talking to you like you're 5 years old. I know most of you get this, but for others that don't. Iodine, you can look it up, is one of the essential elements that without iodine, you die. Now, in the 1920s, they noticed about a 15-20 point IQ reduction, particularly in the Midwest, and massive spikes nationwide of child deformities, birth defects. And they did a bunch of big government studies and found that people that lived on coastal cities and that ate a lot of fish had higher IQs and basically almost no deformities. And they went, oh, it's the iodine. So they started putting a cheap form that's bound, but you still get some of it, but sodium fluoride, I think someone, in the salts. When I was a kid, it still said Morton salts, iodine added. You know, the little girl with the umbrella and it says when it rains, it pours. This is the super version of that. Just a few drops a day. It takes 2 weeks on average to kick in for the average person. And your skin, your stamina, your libido. I remember like, gosh, time flies, like 18 years ago or something. I met Dr. Edward Grip, really smart guy, total visionary. And he said, listen, you need to start taking atomic iodine. And he'd come out with the only one. And he said, you should sell this private label. And I said, okay. He said, you know, you got some of those sunspots on your face. And I was like 38 then or so. And I didn't have bad skin, but I did have some sunspots, brown spots and stuff that weren't freckles. You know, I call them liver spots. And he said, all this other stuff will happen, your libido, everything. He goes, it's about 2 weeks for it to kick in. And right at about the 2 week mark of the average person, you'll kind of feel crappy for a day or two. It's not like you have a cold or the flu, but you feel kind of groggy and tired. That's when it shifts in the cells, the mitochondria. And then a lot of toxins will get pushed out. You might even break out or something. But he said, after that, you'll feel incredible. 2 weeks later, I go, man, I feel like crap today. I have no energy. Lasts about a day. And then when I woke up the next day after feeling sick the day before, it was like I'd been carrying, you know, one of my kids on my shoulders. I'd carry them until they were like 5 or 6. Sometimes it'd be exhausting, but you take them off your shoulders, it feels so good. That's what it felt like. You're insane if you don't get this, and it funds our operation. And I only sell stuff that works, but it's not instant gratification. 2 weeks. Now be careful with it. Talk to your physician before, because if you've got some different thyroid issues, it can cause problems. In most cases, it helps, but you talk to your physicians. This isn't a game. And so a small percentage of people that can do some weird stuff. So be careful. This isn't, I'm not selling placebo here. I only sell stuff that kick you like a mule in a good way. Be conscious about this and realize when you fund this operation, you are funding your insurance in the fight against tyranny.
Folks, this is War Room Live. If I told you that a congressman was getting up to give a speech on the floor of the Congress in which he would be recounting and commemorating a vicious sneak attack that killed dozens of American servicemen, wounded hundreds more, and that he was going to go and talk about these men and honor their sacrifice and just and tell the story about what they went through in their pursuit of, you know, serving the American people in the armed forces. Would it surprise you to learn that there was a large contingent of the conservative right wing online who were infuriated by this, who were pissed off by this, who didn't want them to do this? This is why, I mean, there's stuff like this these days where if you strip it of its timely context, the reaction makes no sense. Like how I keep saying that with globalists in charge, everybody seems insane. Wouldn't it seem insane if the most libertarian, the most, you know, classical in the classic sense, Thomas Jefferson style right wing congressperson in the government goes and gives a 4 minute long speech honoring the sacrifices of American Navy men who lost their lives 50 years ago? And suddenly the right-wing conservative influencer sphere is foaming at the mouth and furious at him for it. It wouldn't make any sense normally. Then I tell you, no, the attack was done by Israel. No, the attack on the American service ship, it was actually Israel that did it. Oh, now it all clicks together. It doesn't make any sense otherwise. It wouldn't make any sense if it was any other group of people, any other nation. It wouldn't make it. It would be crazy. And it is. It is still crazy, but it's the piece of the puzzle that makes it all make sense, right? It's like the code word that unlocks the cryptogram. Why would right-wingers, why would conservative, patriotic Americans be against Thomas Massie talking about USS servicemen being attacked? Oh, because they're on the side of Israel. Okay, it makes sense now. I think I'm getting it. I think I'm understanding. And this really does sort of run the gamut across everything that we're going to cover today, including things like the CBS News takeover. There's a big interview with the New York Times, Scott Pelley. I think his last name's Pelley. I think his first name's Scott. He's been at CBS News for 37 years, and he resigns in protest against Barry Weiss. And I can't help but notice that in the entire interview that he did, Scott Pelley speaks, CBS News is on fire, and Barry Weiss should be removed. I didn't see a single example of him talking about Israel, which is interesting, because that's what all of this is about. So I guess my question is, like, what game is he playing? Is he really this mad about what's being done to CBS News? Does he really feel as though CBS News is being destroyed from the inside by these dishonest and subversive actors? Then why doesn't he call them out? Why is he happy to deflect from where the criticism should actually be going and instead want to turn it towards Donald Trump and his administration? And by extension, all conservatives, all Republicans. As if it's for our benefit that CBS News was taken over and is, you know, censoring their people. It's not for American conservatives. Nothing about the CBS coverage has become more conservative in the traditional American sense, because Barry Weiss, the person who got it from David Ellison, son of Larry Ellison, is not a conservative in any sense of the word. Kind of like Alan Dershowitz. Dershowitz also is considered now a Republican. Why? Because he is pro-Israel. Why is Barry Weiss considered a Republican? Pro-Israel. So a pro-Israeli leftist gets in charge of CBS News, censors CBS News for the benefit of Israel, and the people who are affected by it, the people who actually lose their jobs or feel like they have to resign out of protest because of this, they don't turn around and go, Barry Weiss is doing this for Israel. It's censorship on behalf of Zionists that this is taking place. They're happy to deflect that criticism towards Donald Trump and all conservatives, despite they themselves knowing that that's not where it accurately belongs. So what game are they playing here? It doesn't make any sense to me. You're going to resign in protest over something, but then not actually protest that thing. You're going to disguise the real motivation behind the people that you're protesting in order to gain domestic political points. This is all absurd. But this is where we're at. This is the problem that we're in. Is it's like, on one hand, Israel is overreaching and it's doing things like blatantly manipulating CBS's coverage and forcing them not to cover things and to cover certain other things and et cetera, which makes it obvious that there's influence going on. So the people in CBS News get angry about that and want to call it out. At the same time, the power of the Israeli lobby and the Jewish diaspora in America, especially in the media, is such that they can't actually be honest about it because they know that the punishment will still come. And if they ever want a career into the future, then they better not say what's actually going on. So it's kind of interesting. So it's like, on one hand, you know, they don't have so much power that they can just force silence through this. On the other hand, they still retain enough power, and that the power that they retain is so much more than the benefit that people would get for being honest about it, that people will still keep their mouth shut. Or maybe it's psychological programming of some sort. It's like the guy that we talked about a couple weeks ago who wrote this long essay on X describing the way in which he, as a young Jewish boy, went to a Jewish camp and was psychologically tortured by the Zionists there to traumatize him into accepting, you know, Israel's security as the top priority of everyone everywhere. In case you didn't catch that show, it's pretty simple. What did they call it? They called it experiential learning. They would take little kids in elementary school who are at a Jewish sleepover camp. They would wake them up in the middle of the night, drag them all to a, you know, chow hall or something, and then announce to them that nuclear weapons had destroyed Israel and everybody was dead. And the kids, of course, would freak out and start crying. Many of them had family in Israel, and they thought they'd just been told that all of their aunts and uncles were dead. And then after a few minutes of horror and trauma, they say, oh, no, actually, that didn't happen. We were just joking. We were kidding. Everyone in Israel is fine, but that could happen. But that's what we're trying to avoid. So that fear and hatred and sinking feeling you just felt, remember that. Hold on to that, right? Deliberate trauma-based mind control. This guy writes this whole thing about how evil this was to do, about how messed up it made him, and how he like couldn't believe that this was a regularly practiced thing, that nobody even talks about it. And then people, you know, say back, yeah, that's a messed up thing, you know, for Jews to do to their kids. And he came back going, well, you know, it's understandable why they would do it. I mean, they were just trying to, you know, help us understand the threat that it was. And it's like, what is going on here? What is going on? Here, you're the one that wrote an essay about how it was traumatizing. You're the one that explained what an abusive practice this is, but you're still defending the people that did it. What is the Jewish version of Stockholm Syndrome? Because it's obviously more powerful than whatever the Swedes are up to, right? What is this? It doesn't make any sense. Like, do you understand what I'm saying? With Scott Pelley, it doesn't make any sense. It'd be like if Joe Kent resigned in protest of, you know, Israel's involvement in getting us into the war in Iran, but then he wrote a resignation letter talking about illegal immigration or something. And it's like, well, how can something be so compelling to you, such a motive to you, that you're willing to like blow up a storied career? Scott Pelley, 37 years at CBS News. He was willing to sacrifice all of that. That's just how strongly he felt. He just doesn't feel quite strongly enough to tell the truth about it. What are you talking about? It's not like he doesn't know. Maybe the propaganda has really worked and they genuinely think that now, like, support of Israel is the one and only discriminating factor as to whether or not you're a conservative. Because if Barry Weiss is a conservative, then that's what it means. If Alan Dershowitz is a conservative, then it means support of Israel and nothing else, because these people believe in gay marriage. I think Barry Weiss is married to a woman, if I'm not mistaken. So you have a like lesbian progressive diehard ultra Zionist, and anything she does gets blamed on conservatives. Conservatives take the heat. Conservatives get blamed. Those conservatives, they don't believe in free speech. Look at how Barry Weiss is interrupting CBS News. Pro-trans, pro-gay marriage, pro-reparations, pro-everything that we're against. But she supports Israel. Therefore, everything she does is actually the American Republican Party's fault. Unbelievable. And so the connection to that, of course, to the USS Liberty is sort of that same idea. Why would you try to cover this up? Why would you not tell the truth about this? What would be your motivation for concealing the reality about the USS Liberty or trying to downplay it? And again, notice the way that the coverage of the USS Liberty has morphed. It has changed. Really, we should do a compilation of this. Somebody could make a compilation of this and it would really be amazing, is how people respond to USS Liberty over the years. Get Charlie Kirk saying, it's totally fake, it's conspiracy theory. Well, that's not true. It, of course, is real. And that is a very offensive thing to say to people who lived through it, who experienced the attack, to then turn around and tell them, you're just an anti-Semite. What a horrible thing to say to people. That's not the best way to approach this. So then they reconfigured, they collaborated, they got behind the scenes, and they said, oh, okay, it did happen, it is real, it was Israel, and denying that just makes us look bad, so let's just say it was a long time ago. This is a long time ago. The only reason you want to bring this up must be because of anti-Semitism. It's a sort of a different form of the same argument when they say, if you criticize Israel for their lobbying efforts, but you don't criticize Timbuktu for theirs, you're motivated by, you know, you have to be equally upset about all of these things. Otherwise, your true complaints are not valid. You're not allowed to, you know, be mad at Israel murdering their neighbors if you also don't condemn Qatar spending a fraction of the amount to build universities here. Okay, great. Good point. No, it's a great point. That's really smart. Can't believe I hadn't thought about that. So that's sort of, it's like, wow, this thing that happened a really long time ago, you're still talking about that? Of course, the obvious answer is the Holocaust, but we would never. So it changes. So it goes from this didn't happen to, okay, it did happen, but you're not allowed to talk about it, to, okay, it did happen and it was Israel, to, but it was a long time ago, so you bringing it up is actually the bad thing. It's all ridiculous. It's all absurd. And it becomes a litmus test for people on the right wing. Do you care about the USS Liberty? If not, you're an Israeli agent. It's as simple as that. It really is. There's no other reason to not care. I also think it's funny to see left-wingers pretend to care about this as if they wouldn't turn around and call the very same soldiers, foot soldiers of the imperialist and et cetera, et cetera. They never seem to be able to justify their hatred of Israel and their hatred of America, considering the fact that my dislike of Israel is motivated by their behavior against America. Anyway, we definitely don't need to get into that right now. But Jeremy Boring of whatever that old company was used to be called. What was it? Daily Wire? But then he moved on. But now he's doing something else because he drove Daily Wire into the ground, if I'm not mistaken. I think he had fantasies of being a Hollywood director and ruined the whole thing, if I'm not. Guys, can I get a check on that? He left right before the decline. No, I think it was him. No, I'm going to blame him. I'm actually fairly sure it was him. He had this idea of like the Pendragon cycle where he wanted to basically go toe-to-toe with Hollywood. But he made a fatal flaw. He made one major mistake in that he didn't hire me, Harrison Smith, the greatest filmmaker of all time. I've never been given a chance. Would I work for Jeremy Boring? No, he could work for me. We'd have to make some changes. So here's what he said. He says, 59 years ago today, an American Navy vessel, the USS Liberty, was attacked by air and sea by the State of Israel. Here we notice the first major change in the way that this has been talked about, right? Again, up until just a couple years ago, remind you again, when Groypers brought up the USS Liberty to Charlie Kirk in 2019, he immediately shut it down and said, do not talk about that. That is a conspiracy theory, and I will not stand for that type of stuff in my event. That had been the standard response for the last 50 years. Something has changed. Now they feel the need. Now, they're not doing this because they actually are concerned about the USS Liberty. They were forced to admit this because it's true and because they look ridiculous denying it. But this is the first part of the major change is they actually start off by saying, look, everybody knows the USS Liberty was attacked on purpose by Israel. We know that. That's established. As if that's not the major point of contention that they were trying to cover up for the last several decades. Now, they adopt the truth. They admit the truth and want to act like, yeah, everybody knows this and it's unimportant. Well, if it was unimportant, then you wouldn't have spent the last 50 years trying to cover it up and lying about it. Huh. That makes sense, right? I think logically, that's a fairly sound argument I just made. 59 years ago today, he says, an American Navy vessel, the USS Liberty, was attacked by air and sea by the State of Israel. Of the 234 men in the ships, 34 Americans were killed, 71 were wounded. Today, Thomas Massie will take to the House floor to memorialize the worst interpretation of this event. What, the one you just laid out in the first two? Wait, I'm sorry. What could be a good interpretation of this event? Oh, no. Yeah, they totally murdered 34 Americans, but, it wasn't a bad thing. Yeah, okay. So they snuck attack their allies, the defenseless Americans who thought they were their friends, and murdered almost three dozen of them. But, what, are you going to make that sound bad? You're going to portray that like it's an unfriendly thing? Thomas Massie's going to get up there and condemn it? How dare he? How dare he not understand the truth about the matter? The truth. This might be a good place to sort of explore the Israeli conception of the truth. because it's one of the common things that I kept seeing crop up over and over again when I was making the Eighth Front War, is that they are very concerned about the truth, but they have an entirely different definition for that word than you and I might. See, to them, showing footage of Palestinian children and women and old men being bombed and decapitated and having their limbs torn off, that's not true. Okay. Seeing that footage, the actual, like, tangible proof that it happened, that's not true. The truth that they need everybody to understand is that Palestine is evil and that they're all terrorists and that killing them is what you have to do or else they're going to kill you. So, like, yeah, okay. So the video is real and what it does show is real, but the truth is only if that video is enshrouded by all of the propaganda and Hasbara that makes the bombing and the killing okay and good. Do you understand? Okay. So the truth about the USS Liberty is that it was a vicious attack by our quote unquote greatest ally, killed dozens of young American men, and then it was covered up by the collaborators in the American media and the American government because Israel has been taken over by America has been taken over by Israel for the last several decades. Let's continue. So he says the worst interpretation of the event, an interpretation that suggests Israel attacked the American ship on purpose and our own government either coordinated with them to do or complicit in the cover up. Okay. Yes. Yeah, so once again, the accurate and verifiable, timeline of events. True. Thank you. The USS Liberty has become a rallying cry for many of the worst voices in public life, from the Groyper Wars against Charlie Kirk to Candace Owens' Black Pill and Despair political project to Candace Owens' global jihad of grift and Jew hatred. So I haven't seen anything about the USS Liberty like discrediting that claim yet. So what we have here, if we break down his response, it is to admit that Israel destroyed the USS Liberty, admit that it killed sailors, to condemn Thomas Massie for claiming that it was on purpose, but not to provide any evidence that it wasn't on purpose, but to instead completely divert into a diatribe condemning, again, for the 10,000th time, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, and anybody else that isn't a slavering slave of the Jewish state of Israel. Nothing about the USS Liberty. Obviously, right? The conspiracy theories surrounding the USS Liberty have become one of the most respectable ways to advance anti-Israel and anti-American sentiment. Well, okay. Does Jeremy Boring not understand the way anything works? Like, that's not complicated. Providing proof of the bad things they do is actually a perfectly reasonable way to argue that somebody's a bad person. Like, what? What are you talking about? It's like, this is typical. Of course you're going to present the evidence that my client is a murderer. You're trying to make him look like a murderer. It's okay, but he is. So what? What are we talking about? Presenting the evidence of the horrors and betrayal of Israel, that makes you an anti-Semite, because talking about Israel doing bad things, well, it's just like I always say. Hate speech is when reality matches the stereotype. Let me say that again. Hate speech, anti-Semitism, racism is when reality matches the stereotype. Okay? So the stereotype would be that Israel doesn't actually care about America, is not our actual ally, will betray us, will attack and kill our people to false flag America into a wider war in which a much more significant number of men get killed in pursuit of America, of Israeli interest and not American ones, that the mainstream media knows this and goes along with it and conceals facts about Israel's behavior and antagonism towards America to their American audience to keep the grift going. See, there's all of these stereotypes about the Israeli control of America that are confirmed by the USS Liberty. Therefore, talking about the USS Liberty is anti-Semitic. It's hate speech. You're not allowed to talk about it. It confirms too many stereotypes. It comports too exactly to what the most vicious anti-Semites would make up if they didn't have plenty of real things to point to. That's not a good argument, though. That's not that's actually the argument of a psychopath killer. That's why I keep talking about this in terms of like a serial killer and presenting evidence, that sort of thing. you see this over and over. If you watch true crime, if you watch interrogation videos or anything like that, you'll see people who, even though they're like caught dead to rights, they see the accusation of them as further evidence of their, you know, being persecuted. And they even the way they phrase it, we think that you murdered this person. They'll go, you have no reason to believe that. How dare you? See, you don't know that I did it. So you accusing me of doing it is just evidence that you hate me and you're persecuting me and you had it out for me from the beginning. Remember, the person I'm talking is a murderer. They actually did do it, but that doesn't matter to them. That doesn't matter to them because you're saying it without, to them, the sufficient proof to make that claim, then it must be motivated by, you know, bigotry, even though it is in fact true. Everybody has to go insane for any of this stuff to make any sense. Everybody has to either be like a total psychopath, totally divorced, totally uninterested in what the truth is, and merely in manipulating perception to arrive at a preconceived end. That's like the only thing that's possible at this point, because Jeremy Boring knows the facts about the USS Liberty. He knows it doesn't look good for Israel. And so all he's doing is desperately trying to stop people from expressing that, to stop people from talking about it, to further conceal the truth about this, or at least muddy it so that people who would otherwise possibly have their eyes opened by the history of our relationship with Israel will instead reject it outright and not actually listen to any of the claims that are made. I hope you're not falling for that. How can we know what's true? And what does it mean for us six decades later? Conspiracy theorists love to overwhelm you with the sheer volume of their claims, but there are eight claims which make up the core of the argument. We thoroughly address those eight in this episode and shine a light on the phenomena that undergird the conspiracy theories in the first place. Well, it's not a conspiracy theory. It is literally confirmed. What does he think conspiracy theory even means? The only thing that you can speculate about at this point when it comes to the USS Liberty is sort of the ultimate motivation, whether this was a false flag to get us into war with Egypt or whether this was just an attack by Israel to destroy an American ship that would be listening to us so they could carry out war crimes without the eyes of the media and the American government on them. But everything else is confirmed. There's nothing else speculative about this. There is no conspiracy theory. There is a conspiracy. There were people working in secret, collaborating together in an international way to bring about this conclusion, to kill dozens of American sailors. But Jeremy Boring doesn't want you talking about that because he's a traitor to this country.
Right? Alex Jones is off the air.
There's a lot of noise right now.
Taking me off the air. It is beyond essential that you continue to spread the word about the broadcast and continue to support us.
That's usually when it matters most, to have people in your corner who don't flinch. We've been a partner of this program and of Alex's for a long time.
I'm handing out ice water in the Sahara. I mean, it is such the top rated, the biggest company, because they're the best, and he's a patriot.
We're not going anywhere, and that commitment runs to you. Here's the part that matters. With us, it's 8% when you buy and 0% when you sell. And here's something else. After you make your first purchase and become a client, if you're holding metals you bought somewhere else, bring them to us. We'll help you liquidate them. No commission. That means even if you didn't originally buy them from us, we'll still take care of you. That's not a promotion. It's not something that's for a limited time only. That's just the way we do business. Give us a call and we'll bend over backwards to help you.
Visit kepm.com/gold to get started. Or give us a call at 720-605-3900. And let us help you make room for what matters most.
Spot price of the metal in the ground. Miners haven't even touched it yet. Then they pull the metal out of the ground. They dig their tunnels. They drive it to the refinery. They melt it down, make it into a coin or a bar. That's wholesale. That's usually 3 to 5% over spot. We charge 8% on top of wholesale. When you liquidate, we charge zero.
Buy gold and silver bullion at wholesale. You can look every day what the price is, type in what's wholesale gold and silver, and then you get it from them with a little processing fee, and then they buy it back for nothing with no cost. That's unprecedented. It's so easy. KPM.com/gold. Get a free telephone consultation email. You call 720-605-3900, 720-605-3900.
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.